The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Students of the Game. My name is Alex Bowman, and joined by my co-host today, Nathan Glidewell. Nathan, you got me last week with the Sonic peanut butter burger or whatever. So I thought I'd call your terrible food item and then raise you two more food items. So here we go, Nathan. Go ahead and buckle up. Taco Bell announced they plan to release a Baja Blast pie and a Baja Blast topping for their cinnamon twist in the near future. The exact date still has not been released yet. There's also this one more thing. Good to know. This is probably your favorite part here. They're also releasing a Baja Blast gelato for a limited time at the end of the summer.
Okay, the gelato doesn't seem bad, but the pie and the topping for the cinnamon twist. What are we doing, guys? Come on. It's so my parents, every single time we get Taco Bell, they always compare Baja Blast to tasting like floor cleaner. And honestly, it's not that far off. It's a little over exaggerated. It's not the best taste in the world, but it's also not the worst. So the gelato makes sense. But other than that, It's kind of crappy.
So no pie? You're not going to go out and get that teal-looking pie?
No. I think I'll pass.
All right, the other two food items, which I think are probably a little bit better than the Taco Bell's food items they released. Wendy's is launching an Orange Dreamsicle Frosty for a limited time starting on March 13th.
That's right up my alley right there.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. We all know you're a big fan of the Orange Push Pop.
Uh-huh. All that stuff. They're legendary. What are you talking about?
Yeah. And then the last thing is the Shamrock Shake is back at McDonald's already 2 weeks earlier than expected. Nathan, I believe we had this conversation last year when they were releasing this about the Shamrock Shake, and you said you were going to try it. Did you ever?
No, I have been alive 21 years and I have not touched a Shamrock Shake from McDonald's.
Will year 22 change that, or are we just going to stick with the streak?
I don't know, man. I go with the flow.
Go with the flow? Okay. So if the flow leads you to the Shamrock Shake at McDonald's, you're going to drink it?
I guess by the rules of the flow, I would have to.
We're going to have to get you to try it. And hopefully when the Grimace Shake comes back, you got to try that one.
Maybe.
All right, let's move on to some coaching discussion here. First, Nick Saban. He's joining ESPN as an analyst for College Game Day. It will also contribute to their coverage of the NFL draft and SEC media days. Nathan, I know you're excited about Nick Saban joining ESPN, but is it kind of bittersweet now that he's retired as the Alabama head coach?
It definitely is to a point, but I think you also got to put that aside and be happy for him and the opportunity he gets now to kind of sit back and take this role on as a game day hype up guy. I look at the situation more like what Lee Corso kind of does now, and yeah. Everyone's always looking forward to whatever pick he makes and whatever he has to say. He's always at the end, but now with Nick Saban, hopefully he draws a lot more attention. I know game day of the past few years just kind of went downhill with some of the stuff they've implemented. But now you look at the lineup, and I feel like Nick Saban fits right in there. I mean, you go look back and what he's done in the past season with every Thursday being on the Pat McAfee show. I felt like that drawed a lot of audiences in. I personally liked watching all the clips coming from the show, and I thought they were pretty funny. But I tell you what, if he ever picks against Alabama, I think I might just have a meltdown. but hopefully it doesn't come to that.
I mean, it might have to come to that if it's Alabama, Georgia in the SEC championship or something.
Nope.
You don't think you ever do it?
Nope. I don't think so. I think he's got that dog in him. He's got too much Bama in him.
Yeah, it's gonna be weird seeing Saban being part of that rat poison from the media, because he always dogged on it during his time as the coach, and now he's actually part of the media.
This is true.
I think he'll be great in a role as an analyst for College Game Day with alongside Pat McAfee and Herb Street and Reese Davis. I think that's gonna be really enjoyable to watch, because he's gonna be so mild tempered. Then you have Pat McAfee screaming and Reese Davis trying to reel everybody in. It's just gonna be an experience.
Yeah, definitely.
I think it'll probably be one of, if not the highest rated college game day years of all time with Nick Saban. All right, sticking with some Alabama here, Nathan. Former Washington offensive coordinator Ryan Grubb, who had recently accepted the same position at Alabama, has been hired as the Seattle Seahawks offensive coordinator under new coach Mike McDonald. Any thoughts for Ryan Grubb here, Nathan?
It was hard to expect him to say, even after the DeBoer hire and him being under DeBoer last season at Washington and following him to Alabama, it never felt like Ryan Grubb was comfortable moving down to the South. It felt like he just wanted to stay closer to home. And of course, the Seattle job opening with Pete Carroll being fired and then a whole replacement of staff allowed Grubb to come back and, of course, bring his guy, Scott Huff, with him, who is the offensive line coach, or was the offensive line coach at Alabama. Look, I mean, he's got a very good resume. We've seen what he's done over the past few years. Very, very talented offense. Puts up a lot of numbers. And Seattle got a great one. As far as the buy-in to Alabama, I didn't really think there was any. And I think there are definitely guys on the roster that Alabama has now, staff-wise, that they can promote internally and kind of set up for the future. Personally, my favorite would probably be Jamarcus Shepherd, the wide receivers coach. I felt like he's done a terrific job in the past few years of developing high talented wide receivers and just getting them ready for the NFL. So maybe he can call some good plays in there. But it's definitely a little disappointing. You kind of wanted to see at least 1 year of Ryan Grubb to see what that Alabama offense was capable of. And now there's kind of this hole they had to fill.
Yeah, Alabama is now 0-2 on getting Ryan Grubb to coach for them. Yeah, the last season and now this season doesn't want to be here, I guess. I feel like you said, Nathan, he probably wants to stay closer to home, and he gets his wish coaching for the Seattle Seahawks. I think he'll do great things up there alongside Scott Huff, the offensive line coach he mentioned, Nathan. But Nick Kelly, a reporter, actually talked to Greg Byrne, I believe, after the Iron Bowl basketball, and he asked him about what was the plan was under Kalen DeBoer to figure out this offensive coordinator position. And Byrne said that DeBoer had always had this backup plan in place, and he's working through it right now. So we should be getting a name or names, if they're going to do offensive coordinators, coming out here shortly. Adam Rittenberg reported that it was going to be Nick Sheridan, who was going to be calling the plays, who's currently the tight end coach, and then Jamarcus Shepherd alongside him as the offensive coordinator. So we'll see if that happens to be the plan and if that's finalized, or if he goes out and gets somebody like Kirby Moore, the Missouri offensive coordinator who worked under DeBoer, I believe, at Fresno State. So we'll update y'all as we learn the news here coming out of Alabama. Now, Nathan, I would be remiss if I didn't talk about this either, because we all know on the show you are a humongous Bill O'Brien fan. Like, you have all the gear of Bill O'Brien. You have the number one Bill O'Brien fan foam finger. Boston College ended up hiring Bill O'Brien to be the school's next head football coach, and O'Brien departs Ohio State after 22 days as their offensive coordinator. Any thoughts, prayers, condolences for Boston College fans?
Buckle up. It's basically the same thing I told all Ohio State fans. Actually, I got a message from Ohio State fans now. I bet they're already rejoicing in the streets, so they don't even hear me say that they are free. They are breaking free from their chains. They actually might win a national championship now. Everything is looking bright in Columbus. But Boston College, ooh, yikes. I mean, basically, I compare this to kind of like his Texans days, where he was the head coach and also the GM, and he's just ran the team into the ground. So yeah, Boston College, yikes.
If it was anybody other than Boston College, like if this had been a higher profile program, this might have been a bit of a questionable hire, but it is Boston College. They're a pretty average ACC program. Some majority of the years they're at the bottom of the barrel there in the ACC. So for them to get somebody like Bill O'Brien, who is a well-known name, who worked at Penn State, really built that program up after the Jerry Sandusky scandal, I think it's a good hire, regardless of what we think about him and his time at Alabama. I mean, they couldn't have got any, I don't think that Boston College could have gotten any better a head coach personally, but they could have done a lot worse. So I personally like the hire just because it is Boston College. But like I said, if it had been like, let's say a Tennessee or a North Carolina or something like that, and went to hire Bill O'Brien, There have been a few question marks for me. So I think they kind of did the best they could.
Yeah, we'll go with that.
And you were saying that the Ohio State sort of broke free those chains of Bill O'Brien, and they're celebrating in the streets. But I want to hold your horses there, Nathan, because O'Brien has been replaced by UCLA head coach Chip Kelly as Ohio State's offensive coordinator. Do you think this is more of a sidestep here, a step down, a step up? What are we thinking for Chip Kelly?
It's like a minor step forward. Now, I would say Chip Kelly is definitely not as great as he once was, and his offense could use some modernization. But there's definitely more potential to come from his offensive play calling than anywhere close to what Bill O'Brien would have put out on the field. So I feel like Ohio State has a little bit of a better chance, though, and they are still free of their chains, like I said. But it's something you got to be cautious of, because what UCLA was about to fire Chip Kelly. I believe they won the game against USC.
Yeah.
And that's why. I mean, that's awful. You're going and hiring a guy that was about to be fired because he was doing such a bad job with the program. But yeah, I never felt like USC or UCLA offense was never the issue. I felt like it was always defense. So Chip Kelly definitely still has it in him to be able to coach a good offense. We'll just have to see what he does with all these new guys coming in for Ohio State.
Yeah, I think Chip Kelly's got the pieces to do something with it. You talk about quarterback Will Howard, the transfer from Kansas State. You got Ole Miss transfer running back Quinshon Judkins. Also got returning starter and Trevion Henderson, receiver Mekhi Ebukam, bring in receiver Jeremiah Smith in the recruiting class. The offensive line, I believe they brought Donovan Jackson back at the guard position. The defense, that's really a stud defense there. So you got Chip Kelly, you bring him in. There's really no excuses for this team not to make the college football playoff. One, considering it's a 12-team format, and then two, considering the roster they have. So there's going to be a lot on Chip Kelly's shoulders with him burdening the offensive load and calling all the plays, as Ryan Day said he's going to do that. But it's also going to be a lot on Ryan Day to nail this offense coordinator hire, because he's on thin ice right now because he's lost to Michigan, what, 3 years in a row?
3 years, yep.
3 years, yeah. So he's got to do something here. Before we move on, Nathan, Chip Kelly becoming the team's offensive coordinator, even though he was a head coach, is what, the third or fourth person we've seen?
I believe that's fourth.
Quit as a head coach at a Power Five or a Division One program and go take an assistant position somewhere else. You look at Boston College coach Jeff Hafley going to be the DC at the Packers. Talk about Mo Linguist, the head coach at Buffalo, becoming the co-DC at Alabama, and then Kane Womack coming to be the DC at Alabama, despite being the head coach at South Alabama. What do you think's going on here with these head coaches taking these assistant positions rather than staying as head coaches?
I think they can make a bigger impact on a larger program rather than running a smaller opportunity program. Look, I don't blame them. You have this competitive desire to win games, and when you can do that in a bigger setting, it makes it all more worth it and rewarding. And also, if you do a better job at a place like Alabama, then that sets you up to take bigger jobs down the line, in my opinion.
Yeah, I think it comes down to the fact these smaller programs like a Buffalo or a South Alabama or Boston College don't have the NIL money to compete, and they're sort of at a disadvantage trying to actually do something in these conferences and these coaches make a name for themselves. Where back when NIL really wasn't a thing, you could have the Appalachian States of the world or these upsets happen and these teams come out of nowhere, where now it's sort of the same group of five teams doing the same thing over and over again. You look at Liberty, SMU sort of getting back to where they were. There's tons of other Tulane. So it's weird that you see these coaches leaving, but I completely understand considering the NIL situation and the fact these programs are leaving don't really have the capacity and the money to compete with the other programs around the country. And like you said, Nathan, it gives them better opportunity to make a bigger impact. And you talk about being the DC at Alabama. If you do a good thing there, be in line to get a job at a Power Five program very shortly. Rather, if you were in South Alabama, you're not really getting that same look.
Definitely.
Moving on to college basketball here, Nathan. the Iron Bowl basketball times two here, 2.0 down in the plains. Alabama taking on Auburn. Auburn ends up blowing out Alabama, basically 99-81. Nathan, I'll just let you take it away here because I know you are going to have some officiating issues to go over. So just go ahead and dive into it for us.
I would say this first half was fine. I thought the first half was officiated very, very well.
Yeah.
And I felt like it pretty much was a display of how the game really went. Alabama had taken the lead, I believe, with like 4 minutes left in the first half. Auburn goes on a big run after Davis puts in a questionable lineup change that involved Nick Pringle and no really huge shooters besides Mark Sears. And Auburn goes into half with a 14-point lead. And honestly, at this point, you kind of figured Auburn was going to win. And even before the game, that was pretty much the right answer. But from the first half standpoint, I felt like it was very competitive, very back and forth. Both teams shot the ball very efficiently in the first half. And Auburn ended up pulling away. I felt like that pretty much summed up the game. But then you go into the second half. And this is when officiating takes over. Both teams over 25 fouls. Alabama called for 33 fouls while Auburn was called for 28. Auburn was able to attempt 50 free throws. 41% of Auburn's points, because they made 40 out of the 50, 41% of Auburn's 99 points came from the free throw line. That is a major issue. That takes over a very, very well put together college basketball game and just turns it into a ref fest. I mean, Alabama still took 35, made 28 of their 35. Both teams shot 80% from the free throw line. So that's where they got their points from. But at the end of the day, when the officials cannot stop blowing the whistles, I believe there's five straight possessions where there is a whistle and someone got to the line. That is unacceptable from an officiating standpoint. And they need to be reprimanded for what they did in this game. I believe it was Doug Shiles as a head ref, and he's had problems over the past few years with this. But it's not acceptable. It's awful. I don't want to compare college basketball to the NBA, but this is the way officiating is headed. This is pretty much what it is. I mean, it's like I'm watching Joel Embiid and the 76ers get to the line 80 times in the game because that's what they do. And it has to improve. It took all of the momentum out of the game. It was just this back and forth. I think we're going to commercial break every 5 seconds because of it. The game felt like it took 8 hours to play because there was so many whistles. But outside of that, Alabama turned the ball over 15 times. Yeah. Auburn forced a lot of turnovers. Their defense took over at home. They had a lot of momentum, and they were able to do stuff. And even with that, I felt like the officials missed a lot of calls. There were times where Auburn was able to be a little too physical. I think, especially ending the half, Mark Sears had the ball. Katie Johnson basically body checked him three straight times. Wrapped him up, and there was no call made. There was another time where there's a jump ball called while Mark Sears was in the chokehold. So there are opportunities to call fouls there, and they decided not to because they were letting them be physical. And I can understand that, but then you completely change up your fishing style, and everyone's going to the line every 2 seconds.
Yeah,
it makes me mad, and it takes away from what the players are able to do themselves. But Alabama. I think in the past few losses, you look at the Tennessee loss, they I think they shot or made less than 10 threes in the game. They made 9 here. So I think 10's that magic number for Alabama. If they can make over 10, it's looking pretty good for getting a win. And that's just the identity of this team. This is what Natus has put in place. You shoot the 3-ball efficiently, you're able to get easy points and having high points per possession, you're going to put yourselves in a situation to win. Devil Arena is a very, very hard place to play. Auburn played some of their best basketball Wednesday night, aside from what went on. But I saw, even in the win for Auburn, I saw things that really made me question where the team was headed. And in a game we'll talk about here a little bit, But Jani Broome, Jalen Williams both step up in this game. 24 points from Jani Broome, Jalen Williams with 26, and Trey Donaldson had himself a night with 14 points. It's coming to the point where Aiden Holloway is coming off the bench now. He doesn't really seem to be comfortable. Even in this game, his shot selection was very, very poor. Ended up being 1-for-6 in the 15 minutes he played. Still did have 6 points after getting to the line 4 times and making 3 of those. But Chad Baker-Mazzara, definitely a favorable person for Breece Pearl to put in. He's trusted a lot. He played 20 minutes. He went to the line 11 times, made eight of those shots, and he had 13 points. Crazy right there. And then Dylan Carwell adds another spike off the bench defensively. So you kind of see this set rotation now of who Breece Pearl has trust in when it comes down to winning bigger games. But the problem is the main guys that are relied on in the offense are Jani Broome and Jalen Williams. And we have seen Jalen Williams disappear in games several times this year. Jani Broome has his own struggles. And eventually he'll get in the game and score his points. But there have been some questionable things that I will address here in a few minutes. But let's move on to the Nets Alabama game, shall we, Alex? Actually, let's get your thoughts on this, because I was actually very interested to see what you had to say.
Yeah, so in my opinion, when you're reffing a rivalry game, whether that be Duke, North Carolina, Kansas, Kansas State, that's been a big rivalry game these past few seasons, Alabama, Auburn, my opinion is, you let them be physical and you sort of swallow your whistle more often than not. And it felt like this game, the first half, like you said, Nathan, I thought the officiating was good. I didn't have much problems with it. Like, the only big thing was the end of the half thing where Katie Johnson was basically just hip checking Mark Sears about every time he dribbled the basketball and there was no whistle, but that they'd have been officiating similar that way the entire first half. So like I said, I didn't have a problem with that. But then you get in the second half and neither team can get momentum at all, because every other possession, somebody's blowing their whistle. And I would say about 90% of the whistles they blew were not fouls or should have not been called in the type of environment. There was multiple times where there'd be defenders with their hands straight up and contesting a layup, and they get called for a blocking foul or a shooting foul for some matter. I don't understand that call when the player's initiating the contact and the player's vertical. I've been taught that as a basketball player my entire life. If you're vertical and you don't jump or anything, you're fine. But apparently these officials didn't read the rule book in that matter. So I just felt the officiating could have been 10 times better. But like you pointed out, Nathan, the officiating is not the main reason Alabama ended up losing this game. They didn't shoot the ball well, and they turned the ball over a lot. And that really came down to the reason they lost, because it's just frustrating watching this team turn the ball over the way they did against Auburn. And I know Auburn really got up into them, forced a lot of turnovers, turned that defense into offense. But Alabama, it feels like you pointed out, Nathan, every game they lose, the three-point shooting is a struggle for them. They don't hit the 10-plus, and then turn the ball over. And it's just got to be better in that fact. But let's move on here, Nathan.
Well, to the game will say this. It felt like a very similar game to Tennessee. When we went on the road to Tennessee, Tennessee forced a lot of turnovers, and we didn't shoot the three-ball well. And it was a recipe for disaster. But it felt like, especially in this game, Alabama was a lot more loose with the ball. There's a lot of times where we should have just taken care of the ball, and we didn't. And
yeah,
that goes on the sloppy passes. That just goes into the ball handlers. Because Mark Sears had 3 turnovers. Aaron Estrada, he had 3 turnovers. Rylan Griffin had 3 turnovers. And just it's spread around. So it got to be better moving forward. Yeah.
We're talking about Alabama's response to this blowout loss to Auburn. They go out and they play LSU in Baton Rouge, end up winning that game 109-92. Hit 100 points for what's that, the 8th, 9th time this season, Nathan? I know it's a school record already.
It's a lot.
Second time against LSU this season. For the longest time, it felt like LSU was really in this game. But towards the end of it, what, about 4 or 5 minutes left to go, Alabama really took over and salted this thing away and ended up winning, like I said, 109-92. Any thoughts on Alabama's response here to the loss to Auburn coming out and doing this against LSU?
Well, I'll compare it to the last meeting of Alabama and Auburn. The game after that, Alabama, I believe, played. Who did they play at home? It wasn't Mississippi State, was it? It might have been. But I know Auburn went on the road to Mississippi State midweek or that weekend, and they dropped that game. It felt like a very response game. It's whether NATO
it was Mississippi State.
Okay, so it was a question of what kind of team you want to be. How are we going to set the tone for the rest of the season? Are we just going to kind of let down and give up and keep playing the crappy way of basketball we have been playing? Or are you going to go on the road and get a very tough win when it matters? And the team answered the call. It wasn't pretty at times. I will say in the first half, really, the defense struggled. I mean, Will Baker is a very, very good basketball player. Being able to play the center position and being able to stretch the floor like he does and create his own shot at the rim, it definitely gives LSU just another dimension of offense. And then the guys that played around him were able to make some very, very big shots. LSU shot the ball very, very well. I mean, 55% from the field, 36% from three, 73% from the line. I mean, it's almost that like that was a recipe for success. But you go and you look at Alabama, and they attempt 44 three-pointers, and of those 44, 18 were made. That is absolutely insane. Latrell Wrightsell in this game absolutely went off. 21 points, made 6 of the 9 three-pointers he attempted. Mark Sears, of course, he had 23 points, 4 of 9 from the behind the arc. Ryland Griffin, 16 points. He has 4 of 8. So we know who the big shot makers are. And to continuously get them the ball and run plays to be able to set them up for success, it's going to be the answer for the team. Let's see, how many players are in double digits here? 5.
1, 2, 3,
with
4,
Nick Pringle 5, off the bench. I will say this about Nick Pringle. Significant improvement from the last game against Auburn. He very much struggled in that game. He comes out in this game in the 15 minutes he played, 8 of 9 from the field, 1-on-1 from the free throw line. He had 17 points and was able to get 5 boards. So he played significantly better and provided a big threat in the paint that Alabama hasn't had the past few games. I don't know if it's going to be consistent or not in what Nathan has planned. But I will say this, Grant Nelson didn't have a great game. He very much struggled guarding Will Baker in the first half, and he was getting worked at times. Alex, we've had this discussion because I think we're both to the point where Nate's lineups are kind of questionable. A guy in Muhammad Wagi, I believe, didn't even play in this game. I'm not sure if he was injured or not, or if there was a suspension or whatever. But we both feel like Wagi is the better rim protector and should be in when it comes down to guarding a guy like Will Baker.
Yeah, I understand Grant Nelson's got a lot better defending the paint, being more physical, whether that be on defense or driving to the basket on offense. But when you play Grant Nelson and then the next best option to defend the paint is somebody like Ryland Griffin, who I think is a good defender in his own, but he's not going to defend the rim. He's not going to defend the paint against somebody like, let's say, a Jani Broome or a Jalen Williams, who I think is a good guy to work in the post as well. And it feels like Nate Oates' offense can't support two big men at all times, especially with somebody like Grant Nelson, who cannot shoot the three-pointer. So I understand his reasoning to not put in somebody like Wagi alongside somebody like Grant Nelson to help defend the paint due to the offensive struggles they would have. But he needs to start looking at that going forward, putting somebody like Wagi in when they start to struggle defending the paint. Or even somebody like Diabate, who I think does a lot better job than somebody like Grant Nelson defending the paint, a lot more physical. But one thing I had a problem with Nate Oates is there was, I think, a point in the Auburn game where he had like 3 big men out there. I think he had, I want to say, was it Nelson, Stevenson, or Diabate, and Sam Walters, and then something like that.
Yeah.
It did not look good. Mark Sears was having to dribble for his life.
That was the line I was referring to. That was the last 2 minutes of the first half.
Yeah, and then in this game, or later in that game, I think he just totally did a 360 and then put Jaron Stevenson in center and had like 4 guards out there when they were struggling to defend the paint. I didn't understand that either. So I think Nate Oates has got to realize who his best rim protectors are when he's struggling to defend that part of the paint and put that guy in there or those guys in there to help do it. Because right now, Grant Nelson can't get it done by himself. And they got to find some answer too, because when we get into somebody like Kentucky, or if Alabama gets to the point where they have to play somebody like Auburn again, or if they miraculously do good in the NCAA tournament match up against Purdue and Zach Edey, I mean, you can go
please,
forget about
please
it.
Please don't go into that again.
You can go forget about it. But they've got to find that answer, because Charles Bediako is not there anymore. He can't bail you out at the rim. You got to find that answer going forward.
Yep. Exactly right. And I will say, in the last, I guess, maybe 4 minutes of this game against LSU, I believe it was like a 26-9 run to end out the game. So it's kind of like a switch was flipped, and they just started taking over defensively and offensively for that matter. But getting to 109 points in a college game is absolutely insane. getting over 100 points is crazy, but 109, it's almost like watching the NBA now, the way Nadeau has his offense set up. And yeah, when it is at its best, it is absolutely marvelous to watch. But when it's at its worst, it really makes you want to curl in a ball and cry.
Yeah, talking about curling in a ball and crying, Nathan, Auburn versus Florida hasn't won their, 28 years down in Gainesville?
Yep.
Streak still going, because they ended up losing 81-65. Game was never close. First half was abysmal. Second half wasn't much better. Any thoughts on Auburn's response here after winning their Super Bowl on Wednesday and then coming to Florida and absolutely crapping the bed?
I will say it again. It is exactly like the last Iron Bowl. You have to come out for this next game and be prepared and respond and say, hey, this is the type of team we are. This is what we're going to do going forward. Not absolutely coming out in Florida and crapping your pants on live TV and just looking up at the light and questioning what you're supposed to be doing. I mean, I saw no similarities from the Alabama game to the Florida game. Defense was awful. There was no hustle. It felt like Florida had, they played, 8 guys the whole game, and they hustled the entire time. Auburn gets into their lineup, then they play, almost 10, 11 people?
11, yeah.
And there's barely any hustle. So endurance is a huge thing in college basketball games. You're running up and down the court. I mean, you're running miles, basically. And if you cannot hustle, if you're getting constantly tired, if you're out partying that night before or whatever, you're not focused on the game, then you just need to let your coach know, and he doesn't need to play you. Auburn, I've been saying this for a while now. They rely way too much on Janiah Broome and Jalen Williams. Jalen Williams is staying 3-for-10, 6 points. Janiah Broome, 6-for-11, he had 14 points. Denver Jones, he creates a little bit of a spark. He had 10 points on 3-for-6 shooting. And then KD Johnson was able to get a little bit going in the 21 minutes he played. He was 4-for-7 and scored 12 points. Turnovers, a huge issue for the Tigers. 15 turnovers in this game, didn't take care of the ball a lot. Florida's defense was constricting at times. Auburn tried to shoot a lot more threes than usual. They attempted 17 threes, made 3 of them, 17% from the behind the arc. That is awful. That is not a recipe for success. We've been over what they need to do in order to create more offense, and that is to play better defense. Well, they played crap, lackluster defense in this game. So there's no offense to come off it. No transitions, no fast breaks. You don't get easy points. You don't have people out of position to score against. And Auburn falls apart in the half court offense. And it is a continuous struggle for Aiden Holloway to be able to do anything. 0-for-5 shooting. He is he is the definition of a shot chucker at the moment. He is not making shots. His shot selection is very poor. And at this point, I know he's a 5-star coming out of high school. I know he has a lot of potential. You don't want him to leave for the draft in the first year. I don't think he's even close to being ready for the draft, to be frank. But Bruce Pearl just needs to sit down with him and say, hey, we need to be able to win games when it matters. And you're not creating that spark right now. We're going to have to play you less minutes. And at that point, you need guys like Trey Donaldson to step up, and these other guards, like KD Johnson, that need to create a spark for you. Because if your front court's ever here having to do all the work on the offensive end, then you can go ahead and kiss defense goodbye in the paint, because they're going to be absolutely exhausted from running up and down the court, having to do literally everything for your team. But at the same time, these bigs like Jalen Williams, they have to be consistent. 6 points on 3-10 shooting is absolutely awful and unacceptable, especially after the game you just had against Alabama. And really, you can't ask more from Jani Broom. He tries his absolute best.
Outside of the free throw line, maybe.
One for eight on free throws. Let's see what he was against Alabama here. I'm actually very curious. Jani Broom was 9 of 11 against Alabama, and he comes out and just like, I don't know. I guess that Florida crowd got to him. I don't know how many road games Auburn has lost now, but like they're undefeated at home. So that tells you the whole story. And unfortunately for them, March Madness is not played in Neville Arena. So if they don't start trying to figure out how they can win on the road or in neutral site games, they can go ahead and kiss the season goodbye.
Yeah, I got one thing for Auburn. We are in the year 2024. You cannot make 3 3-pointers in an entire basketball game and expect to win it. That simple as that. That's all I got for you. Can't win a basketball game making 3 3-pointers in the year 2024. All right, Nathan, let's just tear the Band-Aid off here, because I know you didn't really care for either team in this Super Bowl, but you had to watch it here. Super Bowl ended up going into overtime. Chiefs won 25-22. Walk-off touchdown for Patrick Mahomes to Mecole Hardman in the back of the end zone. Any thoughts on the Super Bowl, Nathan? Any gripes, complaints about the 49ers' management of it, considering they had a big lead going into halftime, or any thoughts on the comeback the Chiefs made?
The NFL is scripted.
The NFL script, that's all I got.
I mean, it's pretty much what it is. You kind of had a feeling going into the game. It's going to come down to this walk-off Chiefs touchdown, whether that be in the fourth quarter or overtime. And the only thing that's different is Patrick Mahomes didn't throw it to Travis Kelce, and Taylor Swift didn't fly her $80 million jet down to the bottom of the field and use up all the carbon emissions and absolutely ruin the world while she spews this green ethics. It's so much
pain. Deep breath. They've been deep breath.
I'm getting worked up here over a crappy pop artist who doesn't even know how to sing correctly, and someone who yells at his head coach for not passing the ball. Patrick Mahomes, Kermit the Frog, whatever you want to call him. People are calling him the GOAT now. All I see is he has gotten some of the luckiest Super Bowl runs I've ever seen. I couldn't make this stuff up in Madden, honestly. Dre Greenlaw absolutely snaps his Achilles running onto the field.
That was rough.
Chris McCaffrey, who is a very good carry back, fumbles the ball. So, and Jake Moody misses an extra point. who could have thought, man? Oh, wait, the NFL scripted it. I'm saying that at this point, it's like watching WWE wrestling. It is so crappy to watch. And ever since Taylor Swift was basically around the NFL, you always had this feeling that the NFL is just going to give them a red carpet walk to the Super Bowl. And here we are after it with the Chiefs winning. And you're like, wow, thinking back on it, I knew exactly what was going to happen. I should have just went ahead, took all the money in my bank account and put it on the Chiefs to win the Super Bowl this year. Because I would have been right. Millions of people would have been right. And we've been asking all these betting places, where's our money? Because they'd be out of business for the number of people getting it right. Because the NFL is so scripted. It is absolutely unbelievable. I want to move on from the Super Bowl in this crappy year of NFL football.
Yeah, see, I don't think it was a easy walk to the Super Bowl for the Kansas City Chiefs, because you talk about the first round, play the Miami Dolphins, who were really good, had an explosive offense. Tyreek Hill was still the Miami Dolphins. I mean,
we're gonna talk about the Miami Dolphins that basically fell apart the last 3 weeks of the season, where Tua can complete a pass to his own teammates. We're going to talk about that. And we're going to talk about the Miami Dolphins that cannot play in the cold. Just look what they did against Buffalo. I mean, they absolutely crap their pants when they go to Buffalo.
So then you talk about the Chiefs going to Buffalo and playing them.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Josh Allen is a choke artist.
Playing really good football to that point. I mean, he was arguably the MVP of the last, like, 5 weeks of the NFL season.
Yeah, so, and then Tyler Bass missed a field goal. Scripted.
And then they play the Ravens, who had the number one defense in the league. MVP Lamar Jackson, if you want to think about him being the MVP this year. I mean, so that was a difficult game. They won that.
No, that's not a difficult game because Lamar Jackson basically had to go into the locker room at halftime and change his pants from the amount of crap in it because he is not built for the moment. And neither was that legendary Ravens defense whose secondary looked like a bunch of popsicle sticks out there running around.
I still think it was a difficult path for the Chiefs to get there. You can disagree however you want.
And then you want to talk about the Super Bowl, Alex. Let's be honest. The Lions should have been in the Super Bowl. The Lions should have won the Super Bowl because the Lions would have taken care of the Chiefs in the first half the way that they were playing. The 49ers, absolute crap on offense in the first half. I mean, they got a number of stops on defense and only were able to score, 10 points off it? It is unbelievable. Whenever what happened with all that. So get to Super Bowl for Patrick Mahomes and the Kansas City Chiefs. I hate that team so much. It gets on my nerves.
Do you think, I don't think he's the GOAT, and you say you don't think he's the GOAT, but
he is not.
But do you think Patrick Mahomes is the second best quarterback in the NFL of all time?
He's fine, Tom Brady. Okay. And the way the NFL is just gifting him stuff, he might as well be on the path to be the GOAT. The golden child, pretty much.
Yeah, and then you look at the 49ers, head coach Kyle Shanahan in his last three Super Bowls, 0-3 record, blew a 28-3 lead, and then has been outscored 29-74 in the second half and overtime. So, dude, if you're talking about a choke artist, Josh Allen being a choke artist, Just look at Kyle Shanahan. Dude has Hall of Fame choke artist unlocked. I mean, dude cannot finish a job at all. Brock Purdy can't throw a deep ball to save his life. I don't know if people are going to realize he is not the quarterback y'all think he is. He's just a check down merchant, and it's just not going to work out. I think 49ers are just in this endless loop of getting the Super Bowl and losing over and over again because your coach chokes and your quarterback sells. Jimmy G, Brock Purdy, same person. All right, that's all the time we have for today. Thank you for listening and watching.
Go ahead,
students of the game.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.